The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, thank you very much for that, Wendy. And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Amy McPherson. She is an investigative reporter, a freelance journalist. But before we got into the conversation she and I are going to have, I would play this great track by Cream. Here is I Feel Free. For those of you Canadians out there who still feel free, here's Cream. And that was Cream with I Feel Free here on Northumberland 89.7. Joining me on the line right now is Amy McPherson. So for those of you that don't know who Amy is a freelance investigative journalist based in Ontario, Canada. Her research is dedicated to politics, public policy, economic and social justice, with a penchant for going beyond the mainstream to produce original analysis of controversial subjects. Venues include the CBC, Huffington Post, Open Government Projects, and numerous local publications, often earning featured placement. She's covered federal and provincial elections for the state broadcaster in both print and television formats. Ms. McPherson investigates on an international scale. She's been a guest on American radio programs as well. Current major projects include a special report on the privatization of Canadian health care and a series-based expose on former presidential candidate Mitt Romney, for which she is seeking a partner in the lengthier publications. In her spare time, as if she would have any, she also engages in public education as a keynote speaker and spokesperson for various organizations. To contact her or to receive updates regarding all of those things, please follow her on Twitter at Ms. Amy McPherson or visit her blog for poignant insights that go the extra mile, amymcpherson.wordpress.com. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing great, actually.
I liked your choice of intro song. Great tune, but interesting given our topic today.
Well, I'm glad that's one of the reasons why I decided to play it, actually. So today we're going to be talking about the debate that was last week. So I was lucky enough to watch it on CPAC. Thankfully, I still have cable, one of the few out there, I think, that still have cable. But a lot of people watched it online, and there was that hashtag, what was the hashtag, Mac Debate or something along those lines?
Mac Debate, yeah.
Now, that's one hashtag I didn't use. I decided not to do that. And the reason for that, actually, was after having read a couple of your pieces and some other people as well, who felt, well, that maybe the hashtag was being used to track their behaviors and other things like that. So I want to talk to you about that in a moment. But what did you think of the debate?
The debate. Summarizing it, I don't think it had any particular value, educational value for voters. And it was very, very well rehearsed and a bit of personal digging between the leaders between one another. And I would say that I would characterize it that Trudeau and Harper basically treated it like a schoolyard playground, scrapping it out with each other as traditional foes, and Mulcair was perhaps a bit too rehearsed that he appeared like he was delivering a television commercial every time he spoke. And Ms. May, she is a very intelligent gal, a breath of fresh air most often, but also gaffe-prone with some of her comments, like about the Muslims, and I saw a lot of people get upset over that. So, you know, it was just more of the same that we already see in the headlines anyway, nothing original of true value to me.
Well, I mean, obviously the Conservatives were looking to show their leader as a guy who can stay the course. Justin Trudeau trying to prove to everyone that he is ready. Did you get that impression at all?
I personally do not believe that any leader was particularly successful in getting their message across.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a genuine way that voters are really looking for.
Well, some would argue after that debate it didn't look as though any of them were ready.
I think I've heard that a lot as well.
Well, it's a bit early in the game, though, right? We still got some 10 weeks to go. Before the actual voting day.
Definitely, and the kid gloves were likely on that day. Mm-hmm. Everyone not wanting to do anything too controversial and get the headlines rolling already, although they're trying.
Well, I think that was part of Mulcair's problem and with his prep as well. I think a lot of people were concerned, I think with the NDP anyway, that he was going to come across as very angry and combative. So they said to him, you know, hold back, Tom, just, you know, hold back. And instead we got the spooky eyes.
Well, even
smiling eyes.
Holding back in the debate, I think it's more than that. You know, he was labeled as Angry Tom by the Conservatives, and I've noticed that all his photo ops since that started coming out, he's worked very hard to be smiling and approachable in those pictures so that people can't keep bringing that. And he was at least successful in that during the debate. He didn't come across angry, in my opinion. If I saw any hostility, it was mostly mostly on Harper's part, but between Harper and Trudeau.
Yeah, I think that's probably what a lot of people saw. But again, you know, this is why we watch the debates, to see how they're going to go toe-to-toe, as it were. As far as any real policy outlining or any real tangible policy, I don't think we got much of that.
I think it was pretty darn empty.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Elizabeth May in her closing tried to say, you know, we need to talk again because we didn't discuss Aboriginal issues, we didn't discuss housing issues.
Agree, and Elizabeth May also has her own agenda, not meaning that in a derogatory sense, but her party is still very young and trying to get a foothold, and she's being denied access to the debate, so they really need to put pressure on there to get her just to be able to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in your role as an investigative journalist, and you've been across the country obviously many times, what do you think is an issue that just is not being discussed in this election?
Defense and privacy and everything that could possibly relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that a result of C-51? Nobody wants to touch the conversation because of C-51? Or?
In part, yes. In great part, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know the Liberal Party has always branded itself, and rightly or wrongly, as the party of the charter, and we know that C-51 sort of upset that apple cart for the Liberals. Do you think they're going to be able to pull themselves out from under that wreckage?
I don't know. You know, anything can happen in an election campaign, and I'll certainly be watching like everyone else, but they've got a heck of a lot of ground to recover because Trudeau came out really strong with charter arguments on just about everything he was talking about, especially as it related to women's rights and the anti-choice folks that are campaigning against him. So he came out strong with that, and then in face of C-51, it was like everything about the charter got forgotten, and I'm not clear on how the Liberal Party is going to recover from that, because they definitely took severe damage.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of folks, including myself, are thinking, well, you know, we have the charter, we have the Supreme Court of Canada, obviously those laws will be tossed out. We know that Harper's had some 40, almost 50 pieces of legislation turfed out. You know, would you think the Harper's government intentionally introduced this bill, obviously, to split the left, but do you think they know it's not going to pass muster?
I think that they will fight with all they've got, and in a way, it very much resembles what the Republican Party does in the United States. They have a lot of politically connected lawyers who study their Bill of Rights and how to affect changes. They've been able to severely undermine search and seizure protections that they used to have by tackling things that way. They go at it bit by bit, gain whatever ground they can, and even in increments, it erodes our rights, and it shifts the public perception as to what it naturally believes it is entitled to be protected from. So as you start to change that understanding with everything that all the propaganda that's put out to support the positions, the issue starts to get really clouded and people get away from the base of what the argument is and that gets lost. So in that way, they are successful. But also, when they're passing this legislation that is, to my mind, definitely unconstitutional and would quite likely be overturned by the time it reaches the Supreme Court of Canada. But the point is, it takes 10 years, an entire decade, to get it to that point. So even if it is unconstitutional when it's put into effect, it will take at least a minimum of two more governments to be able to overturn it, and it will affect Canadians' lives in all that time.
No, it will most definitely affect Canadian lives, not just here, but also abroad. I mean, some of the powers that they've basically brought in for CSIS, really a lot of it involves overseas operations.
Agree, yes.
And so, I mean, Canadians obviously are not aware of what any of those operations are. We've been told there's no boots on the ground, and we know that's a lie. You know, there was a soldier killed by so-called friendly fire, and we don't even know what he was doing. Apparently, he was out on some type of recon mission. But, again, no information is coming to light with what regards to that.
Right, and what I can tell listeners is stay tuned. I've got a truly large investigation that will be coming out before the election that addresses those issues in particular. And it will be really surprising.
Well, I can't wait to hear it, and I know that a lot of listeners out there are just wondering. I wonder what kind of pushback you're going to get from the current regime with what you're trying to put together.
Well, I can divulge that I have spoken about this with Rocco Galati. He is a friend, and I am aware of C-51 and the possibility of backlash for releasing information as a journalist. Now Canada, under those tenets, are facing basically the same things that Americans are. So the big stories that we've seen coming out of the U.S. where journalists can be imprisoned for writing about government activities, we're now in a situation like that, and that's very serious to me.
Well, it's almost Patriot Act 2.0, isn't it?
Yes, I would say so.
You know, and I mean, you know, here we are in Canada thinking, you know, well, when that happened in the United States, my God, I can't believe their government would do that to them. But, you know, the argument was, well, the legislation was dropped on their chairs hours before the vote. Nobody really had a chance to read it. But with Bill C-51, this was a bill that was debated. It was discussed. There were amendments put forth and denied. There were all kinds of attempts for change during the parliamentary process. This is what the Liberals are going to rely on when they go to the public and say, look, you know, we did everything we could, and the bill still passed. Because, of course, the Conservatives had all the numbers, right? They had all the seats.
Yeah, and debate was shortened. It wasn't heated from where it did arrive. The testimony was basically stacked and controlled by the Harper government, who could contribute, so it was heavily stacked against people that were speaking for civil liberties. There's that issue, and the Liberals have put themselves in quite a corner with C-51. Now, I do agree that there needs to be oversight of CSIS and CSEC, absolutely, and they were including those provisions, but I do think that it will harm them that they are still for creating the no-fly list and the difficulty in appealing those conditions, which is directly against our constitutional rights and I believe will be part of what could be found unconstitutional once C-51 is challenged, if that happens, and I suspect it will be. Again, so that's the charter argument totally undone just in that one argument alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I want to touch on more of that point because of the announcements made by the Prime Minister yesterday with regards to flying to travel tourists or travel terrorists that are looking for a holiday. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these few words. Listeners, please stick around. My guest is Amy McPherson. She is a freelance journalist and researcher. Folks, you don't want to miss this conversation. Stick around. Sorry about that. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7. By the way, we are going to be at Ribfest this weekend. So if you want to drop by the booth there at Victoria Park, and check us out at the booth. I believe I will be there, but I'm just not positive at this point what time. But I am looking forward to it. My guest on the line is Amy McPherson. Amy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Now, just before the break, we were talking about Bill C-51, which, of course, is the new anti-terror law. It's now law in this country. And one of the bones of contention for a lot of people, especially with regards to freedoms, is this idea that the charter right guaranteeing freedom of travel is now somehow going to be encroached upon if we decide to become terror tourists, which, just the notion of it alone is something that's a little bizarre. But apparently that's a concern.
Yeah, and again, I think that will definitely be held unconstitutional, but it may take a period of a decade to turn that around, and the Harper government has followed in the footsteps of the Australian government that has enacted such legislation, I think, surrounding travel to Mosul in Iraq. So it's really seems to be a Five Eyes idea kind of here, the Western nations that are trying to lump together doing this, and I'm unclear about the Australian rights and freedoms, how it may transgress those, but it definitely does impact Canada, and we do have legal recourse that I can foresee being pursued.
Mm-hmm. No, what about people who are put on these lists without their knowledge? I mean, how do you defend against something like that?
That too, and we already had that issue with security certificates, so.
Yeah.
We're going to see it come up again through this manner as well.
Is terror tourism, I guess this is a huge issue in this country? I mean, is it just something we're not hearing about because mainstream media is not covering it? Or I mean, how genuine is this concern?
I don't think it is, to be honest. From everything that I've been able to read, we might be talking about a couple hundred people that have gone to assist ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And that is from all countries in the world that we're aware of, so that's certainly not specific to Canada. I believe that I've heard possibly a couple dozen people from Canada may be involved. Should that warrant legislation that strips the rights and freedoms of all Canadians? I don't see how that weighs out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the law and order agenda seems to be more about disorder than law and order, that's for sure. We know there have been a few terrorism-related trials in Canada, a few people that are held on certificates, as you mentioned earlier, that aren't allowed to go anywhere in the country. But, you know, for the average regular Canadian person out there, I mean, they're thinking, well, this isn't going to impact me. Is that just the wrong assumption?
I believe so, and a doctor family from the Toronto area could attest to that. They had planned a vacation with their family. I'm pretty sure it was to Disney World, and they were denied access. They weren't allowed to fly. They weren't given any reason. They were just turned away, and they have absolutely no relation to terrorism whatsoever. This is a respected doctor in the community, and they also, without that information, have very little ability to appeal it, to have it amended, to have it explained to them. Mm-hmm. To be able to do anything at all.
So this is really the nefarious nature of Bill C-51. Everyone knows it as C-51, so we're just going to call it that. But it goes beyond just that. I mean, even what you do, you're an investigative journalist. I mean, your job is to get information that, you know, other people might not be able to get, or information that isn't easily accessed, right?
Agree.
And your ability to disseminate that information to the greater public for their own good is really being infringed upon.
Absolutely, and the Fourth Estate is a very important part to a functioning democracy. If you don't have freedom of the press, you don't have a democracy.
Do we really have freedom of the press in Canada, though? I mean, it's in the hands of, what, six families or six groups, six large corporations anyway that really control the media in this country?
I believe that's a fair question, and definitely a valid issue in Canada and something that we need to be talking more about.
Mm-hmm.
I think since 2011, since the last federal election when Harper obtained his majority, that a lot of news coverage started feeling the pressure from the corporate end and losing profit due to the drop-off in print and people going online and the availability of information online. They were combating that, but then also pressure from the government and just different tactics that were involved in doing that have colluded in the middle to really constrain Canadian journalists nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Well, some would argue that just by forcing people online. I mean, that's what CBC's been – that's their new mandate, apparently, is to get as many people online as possible. It really does cloud the amount of information you're able to get. I mean, they at that point, they can control what you see and what you don't see, right?
Exactly, and it's branded.
Mm-hmm. Well, I alluded to this at the very beginning with regards to Mac debate and some of the stuff that was going on with – because I know you're not the only person, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there was information being gathered, and that information was essentially being used to screen online people with regards to who their support was or what their political leanings were.
And this is quite disturbing. It began as a complaint to McLean's from myself because I was listed as I was put on, quote, list of NDP, and I am a journalist. So it's not like I can afford for that to happen. This is my credibility. My work has to be unbiased, and I didn't know who was doing it or why. And as that complaint was unfolding, more information came to my attention. Everyone's tweets were being collected, and I found out it was not just the Mac debate hashtag, but also the Canadian Polling and the Election 42. And so there's this database that I've come across where the tweets are being collected, and they're being graded as pro or anti all the political parties involved in the federal election.
Mm-hmm.
So then screening lists can be made from that, and we don't know what entities are doing it, and an article came out from MyPolitics today that said the Liberals and the NDP are also pursuing the same type of technology that the Tories are using, and I already had quite an expose on what the Tories are doing with that technology.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't just data analytics. Data analytics is more or less counting numbers, the amount of things. But what the folks that I came in contact with over the Mac debates, they admitted using semantic analysis, and that is a completely different ball game altogether that people really need to understand. So what it is it's assessing their text for syntax and tone,
mm-hmm,
to try and determine what their thoughts and feelings are. And colloquially, this is dubbed the thought police in ethical circles. You know, if I hate to take it here. I'm not trying to polarize or be dramatic or anything, but
mm-hmm,
even ex-members of the Stasi have spoken out and said what Canada is doing, they didn't even have nearly that capacity in their time. So this is taking that one step further. This is trying to judge what people are thinking and feeling by what they're tweeting. And even more to that, some of the tweets that I came across that were being collected for this database weren't even completed. Like, they were ones that people had entered in error, and so they deleted it so they could then put up the correct tweet. So absolutely everything is being taken,
mm-hmm,
and even partial thoughts are being analyzed this way.
Well, and again, that is not only disturbing, it's undemocratic.
I would say so, but as iPolitics pointed out, that political parties are exempt from privacy legislation in doing this, but again, we can't force the entities that were involved in that Mac debate project to disclose who they're working for or
mm-hmm,
to support, so we don't even know where that information is being used, and we don't have modern privacy legislation that really addresses people's rights on the Internet, and I think this will be the battle of our time. I'm all for trying to set up an Internet Bill of Rights. It's the best way I could possibly describe it, but
mm-hmm,
I think that it needs a lot of discussion, especially in Canada, and that's something we're not talking about whatsoever, because we had our charter rights, the United States has its Bill of Rights, everybody has something in place. Every nation state has something in place to protect their peoples. But now that everything is online, this is a global playing field, and
mm-hmm,
it's like all these battles have to be refought anew to establish what those rights are online.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I discovered, and I was talking to you about this earlier today when I couldn't remember the name of the organization, but it's called Voter Outreach Center, okay? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have been getting calls from the Voter Outreach Center. And this one person wrote in a comment. This is on the Government of Canada website, by the way, if you can check this out in the comments section. I got this through Reddit. The voter outreach calls. The person said they received some leading questions, outright false information. The caller gave them fake contact information. And what they didn't know is that the line was monitored for harassment and trace. They traced the call back to a marketing company who has apparently adopted the name Voter Outreach Center, which used to be the Department of Elections Canada, right, if you go to the government website. So a little more information, and of course it turns out that the Voter Outreach Center, quote-unquote, is essentially an arm of the Conservative Party of Canada. So this is sort of robocalls redux, if you will. They've got a brand new name, but it's essentially the same thing. So that's going on, as well as this data mining that's going on.
I saw the same information, and when you marry those two things together, this is absolutely dangerous to democracy in Canada and a fair election.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, there is some word I hear that Canada's getting election monitors.
Yes, from the OSCE. And I did alert them to the information that I came across, although I haven't received any response from them yet. They were alerted by a good handful of Canadians when they came across it as well, when they figured out what was being done and they took issue with it.
So are we, in fact, getting monitors?
Yes.
Good.
The monitors were without question before this happened.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, frankly, because this is a government that's won power in the last three elections through nefarious means, to be polite.
Well, if you think about it, this is truly historic for Canada because traditionally we are the ones that monitor other countries to make sure their elections are fair and safe and equal. And now we're under the magnifying glass because we're not trusted on the global playing field.
Well, and the irony isn't lost on anyone who remembers we sent election monitors to Ukraine, right?
Yes, yes.
So there you go. I guess one good turn deserves another, right? So really, I mean, we're in a tough position here as Canadian voters, you know? I mean, I've been tweeting out for the last week now on October 19th, Election Day, vote. The stakes are too high to stay home. If Canada is a nation of laws, why isn't our government obliged to follow those laws? But we have a prime minister who says that he doesn't support the charter. I mean, he's agreed. When a prime minister openly declares his intent to disregard the Canadian Constitution, every citizen should be alerted. This was a tweet I got earlier today. But, I mean, this is a prime minister who says the Charter of Rights. What Charter of Rights?
Well, I think this has long been known, and it's long been known of Harper's position since his days back at the, whatchamacallit?
The Heritage Front?
Yeah, basically, in those
National
days,
Citizens
yes.
Coalition or whatever they call themselves.
And if you look at the hard right conservative ideology, most of those people have never agreed with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It is the reason why they hate Trudeau and are projecting that onto Justin Trudeau as well. And they want the British North America Act back with the right to bear arms.
Well, that was never in the British North American Act.
Well,
right?
that's how they interpret it, and that's what they think should be in place instead of Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and that's a core hard right conservative ideology.
Well, clearly, those people are not aware. I mean, our Constitution is the BNA and the Charter of Rights. I mean, that's what our Constitution is. That's the makeup of our Constitution. Just like the U.S. has the two parts, we have the two parts as well.
Well, our Constitution is the Constitution with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and that is what replaced the British North America Act. It did make some changes that removed some of the provisions within the BNA.
Well, it is incredible that we live in a country where this information is out there. I mean, anyone can get access to this. Anyone can go to a government website. You can download a copy of the Charter. You can read the Constitution. You know, I was talking to a gentleman the other day, a lawyer, who said, you know what, it's almost as though every Canadian citizen should have their own copy of the criminal code in their home. You know, that's what we've become, a country where, you know, if the lawmakers aren't going to pay attention to the laws, at least we should know where we stand, right?
I would definitely agree with that, and I think that brings us into an entirely different realm of conversation of Orwell versus Huxley, because a lot of people talk about 1984 and the surveillance that we're facing right now, and they really relate it to Orwell's narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it is more akin to Huxley's projection that what we would face was an overabundance of information that we would then back away from it. And I think that's what's happening on the Internet. People get into gardens, they only go to certain corners of it, and then they don't explore the rest, or they're only reading headlines now instead of whole stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's quite a reality.
Well, that's an interesting point. We're going to take another quick break, but we will be right back. My guest is Amy McPherson, freelance journalist, reporter for various media outlets. We're talking about the election. We started to talk about the debate. Now we're going to move into another realm of the conversation, so please stick around for that. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. We will return. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. My guest is Amy McPherson, and we are just about to enter a new realm of our conversation, and that is, of course, about the charter. But you said something off air. I think the listeners should hear about what you think of the charter.
Pardon me, sorry?
So, well, you said something while we were just discussing just off air about what the charter represents to Canadians.
Oh, it basically is the government's contract to Canadians in how we will be treated in that relationship, and it's absolutely being ignored today.
Absolutely. No, there's no doubt about that in anyone's mind. I mean, we have a prime minister right now, a government that has had more than 40 pieces of legislation tossed by the Supreme Court, all regarding charter challenges. And, you know, that's the saddest part in my mind, that we have to actually take our government to court. Not only that, but the fact that the government spends millions of dollars a year. I mean, one case that just went to the courts recently about the money that they're withholding from victims of PTSD, sufferers of PTSD, former Canadian service personnel, who are now being sued by their own government to receive the benefits that they deserve.
And some of those people have lost their limbs as well that aren't getting their payments. And, yeah, it's a pretty ugly situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was reading on the weekend one thing that most Canadians aren't aware of, the we lost 136, I believe, soldiers during the Afghan conflict. I think that was the total number. But we've had almost 50 more than that, so 180 odd that have killed themselves, committed suicide as a result of their engagement in that conflict. More people have actually died from self-inflicted wounds than have died in combat, and that to me is alarming.
That is the same in the United States as well, although their population is larger, so the numbers are more exaggerated than Canada's. So when we're talking, you know, about a couple hundred people, it might not sound like that big a deal, but you need to look at percentages. It's absolutely huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I want to move on to, if we can, we can talk about the military. I mean, right now we're talking about engaging with a more vibrant military action against ISIS and ISIL. This government just committed $9 billion, I think it was today, to helping minorities in those areas. We know what that means. That's Peshmerga fighters. That's Christian fighters, if you will. But what we're not talking about is the fact that we have men and women in the theater of combat right now that are essentially ill-prepared. I mean, we're not sending them with the top-of-the-line gear, you know what I mean?
We're not sending them with the right gear. We're not sending them with support when they get home or when they exit or when they're injured. And the conversation could go on for hours about
mm-hmm.
this. I feel very strongly about our service people and what they're facing and the politics that they've been put in, and our military should not be political. It should have obviously it's related to geopolitics, but their actual care and treatment should not be a political issue like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, this government loves to wrap itself in the flag, as Justin Trudeau said during the debates. They love to wrap themselves in the flag and talk about how they love our soldiers, and yet they've sued them in court. Our Navy's now, I read a report about a week and a half ago that said Bangladesh has a more capable Navy than we do.
So I've heard, yes.
So.
And we bought a whole bunch of warships that needed repair, that
mm-hmm.
Cracked hulls, not good enough to use, yeah. And we don't even have the service people trained to navigate them.
No, well, exactly, and these are the concerns. These are everyday concerns for people in the Canadian Armed Forces, listeners. For those of you that know, I mean, this government has spent a lot of money. They've done the new JTF base that's being built at Trenton, so they've spent a lot of money here in the riding in the new riding of Bay of Quinte as well. So we've seen them throw a lot of money around, But it doesn't appear as though that money's actually sticking to the ground. It seems to be just another big photo, what do I call big checks and photo ops, right?
I would concur, definitely, yep.
So where does that leave us? I mean, Amy, you're a voter, I'm a voter. I mean, what are we left with here? I mean, do we fight it amongst the so-called lefties and hopefully one of us comes out a victor? I mean, how do we determine, how do we get this government gone? I mean, we know that they're going to be spending money. They've got a lot more money in their war chest to target very specific ridings. That's how they got elected last time. What is it Canadians can do to ensure that that doesn't happen?
They need to be informed and they need to participate, and so many of them have been disenfranchised that they're not, and new legislation that Harper has put in place is to discourage people from voting, young people, old people, poor people, all sorts of people, just to not get them to the polls, which again replicates very much what the Republicans have done in the United States. I think that if Canadians understood what was really happening and took the time to look into this, if they spent 5 minutes a day, they would feel so much more enlightened and concerned for that matter.
Mm-hmm. And where is it people are going to get this information that they need, though?
Online. Obviously, I'm a journalist, so I support journalism, print newspapers, wishing to keep them alive.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much political interference with the mainstream media and different relationships within that you need to get a whole field of vision, and you need to be looking at everybody's arguments to be able to arrive at your own conclusions. And the only way that you're going to get all sides of input is on the web.
Right. And, of course, folks can check out your website. Are there other journalists out there doing what you're doing? I mean, we're getting a very clouded, a muddy impression out there from mainstream media. We get a lot of talking heads. I mean, a lot of Canadians used to rely on the CBC, but it doesn't look as though we can rely on them as much.
No, the majority of the board was replaced after the 2011 federal election with Tory supporters. The direction within definitely clamped down and changed. CBC is not at all the same atmosphere that it used to be. It was an absolute pleasure before. Today, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
So where were we going with that? Sorry, Dave?
Well, I'm just talking about the overall disdain that people are having. Because, again, most Canadians are saying, well, I can't trust these guys, and I'm not getting the news I need from that. So, I mean, where do I go?
Oh, other reporters, right. A lot of reporters have taken to their own. I've really said that anybody worth their salt that really wants to get out information has had to do that, because it's next to impossible to do within the mainstream anymore. So that's why I started FreeThePressCanada.org. And like stuff about the MAC debates, the surveillance, the analytics, all that information is on my website, and people can read it there. There's plenty of other journalists that have been doing that, and a lot of times you might want to look for an MSM Journal's personal website where they go to say things that can't get into print.
Mm-hmm. Well, and unfortunately, that's more often than not in the modern world. My guest in the studio, not in the studio, my guest online has been Amy McPherson. She is a freelance investigative journalist based in Ontario, Canada. Her research is dedicated to politics, public policy, economic, and social justice, with a penchant for going beyond the mainstream to produce original analysis of controversial subjects. I'm not going to ask you who you're going to vote for, but, I mean, it's got to be tough out there. You are on the front line, so you get to see a lot of things that a lot of people don't have access to. I said earlier with regards to your investigations, it's got to be difficult for you to even make a decision this time.
It is, and I am definitely unbiased in my work, but what I can say is that I have been so personally impacted by Harper government policies that they are an extreme concern to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're an extreme concern for a lot of people, but I think everyone is wondering the same thing. Well, if I can't go there, where do I go? We've got so many other choices out there. I mean, I'm encouraging people to get to know the candidates in their own ridings and to ask questions, tough questions, of their candidates. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I also think that the atmosphere that has been created in Canada over the last decade with the Harper Conservatives in control, no matter what happens in this election, it is going to take baby steps and mm-hmm. at least two more elections to step away from it. to start undoing some of these things, because legislation that was enacted, it takes time to overturn. Court cases take time to happen. And I don't think that we're going to have, I'm not predicting a clear majority for anybody out of this election. So if we end up with a minority government, then it's going to take getting to know the new face of things and how things come later in the next election. But a decade to do, a decade to undo.
Well, no, absolutely. And I don't think anyone would disagree with you on that. There's so many things that we need to talk about as well. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, healthcare, the corporatization of healthcare in this country. That's, I mean, when you ask Canadians what is one of the best things about being Canadian, they always point to healthcare, right?
Yeah, and it used to be great, but that was a good bulk of my work in years prior. It is so voluminous that I can't possibly put it all out by myself. I have done some interviews here and there and released some videos that I have, but the Harper government signed 22 specifically free trade healthcare agreements with other countries that lead to the privatization of our healthcare through different means, especially digital means and the e-health system. And they've been promoting it at the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. I even suspect that John Baird may have stepped down to accept a position with the International Peace Institute. It's a Washington think tank, right-leaning criticizer of the UN that wants to restructure the World Health Organization, also to overlay this new way of doing healthcare business on a global playing field.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned e-health. Is there something that citizens should be concerned about with e-health?
That's a difficult question to answer because, I mean, the digitization of records is obviously good for access to the information for the professionals that are caring for Canadians. Mm-hmm. I agree with that, but it's what's being done with the information, who's possessing it, who can profit from it, and how it's being turned into private healthcare without any safeguards, because we're not talking anything about this, and we don't have anything that relates to a, quote, Internet Bill of Rights.
And all of that would be covered, hopefully, under some type of rights anyway. If I mean, we're talking about privacy, right?
It's like the Wild West again. As soon as everything went online, it was the Wild West all over again, and we've got to start from square one, and that includes our health care.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, I mean, one of the arguments that I had heard from the current Liberal government in Ontario with regards to e-health, because, of course, it's been a big financial nightmare for the province, right?
Right.
It was started by Mike Harris, and personally, I've always been sort of a fan of the fact that my doctor can get my information online. I always thought that was a pretty good thing. But to not know who else has access to my information online, there's where your privacy concerns come into play, right?
Right, and 22 other countries involved in free trade of that information.
My own personal information.
Right, your most personal information, your bodily functions inside, available to 22 other countries.
Wow, the hair's standing up on my arms as I'm listening to this, listeners. I wonder how many people are at home just wondering, what are you talking about? And we're coming up to the top of the hour. Is it possible to get you to stick around until after the next news cycle, Amy, and maybe we could talk a little bit more about this, or do you have to go?
I could stay on for a little bit longer.
Okay, well, I'm going to play a quick track for the listeners because that'll lead us right into the top of the hour. My guest is Amy McPherson. Listeners, we are going to venture into the realm of what is essentially going to become public information, and that is your personal and private information. Once it goes up online, as Amy is alluding to, just how personal and private is that information, and I think that's a huge concern for some. So we're going to pick up the conversation after the top of the hour. Please stick around, listeners. This is going to become probably a little more interesting than you had anticipated. But first, before that, just a quick reminder to folks out there. Here's Carole King.
You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face.